Okay, we've got Don Sutherland on the line. G'day, Don. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Annie, and g'day to you and all your listeners.
Remind listeners that you were here last week having a chat about the National Wage case and how important it is for the lowest waged people in Australia, but it also has knock-on effects to the other parts of society. But today we're going to look at the obverse of the coin and about profits.
Yes, well, the annual wage review is indeed, just to make one brief recapitulation point, or a recap point, is one of the three decisive decisions made periodically, in this case once a year, that set the standard of living for a minimum of nearly 3 million workers, with flow-on effect indirectly to many others. And the golden rule, of course, in many discussions we've had is you can't discuss wages without discussing profits. So, Annie, what if I said to you and your listeners that Australia's profitability, rate of profit, was in around 2000 and 2021 about 7% and falling? In other words, there is a profitability problem in Australia, and it is caused by primarily by new technological investment.
Could you explain that?
Yes. Well, the rate of profit, the real rate of profit, is the total profits divided by the total wages plus the capital invested, and there are three or four different ways of measuring that. I won't get into those weeds today. The latest research, highly credible, out of a young a political economist, Kulya Karambaksh, in the University of Sydney, he has done a lot of work, highly credible and being widely cited, on the world rate of profit, which shows a steady decline in the world rate of profit. That is, the capitalist system has got a problem with its own primary indicator. And that has flow on it to two big deal things.
So what you're saying, before we go on, what you're saying is that capitalism, as if it was a car, it would consider that it's chugging along okay if it's got petrol in the tank and it's shooting out power. It's profit.
What's happening is that it's in crisis because of its own contradictions. If you invest more, if we expect employers to invest more productively, that in the first instance puts downward pressure on the rate of profit, which is what they are primarily interested in. That's what motivates them all of the time, every minute of the day.
Yes, so for everybody else, it's the running of society and the maintenance of a way of life. But for the capitalists, it's really just about profit.
Just about profits, and the spin-off effects, of course, is the harm that the solution to that problem does to their to the overall standard of living, and of course to nature. What I'm calling nowadays the ecological chasm between humanity and the rest of nature. So the solution, the capitalist solution to the problem that their system generates, which is a downward in profitability, is harmful for everything else. And that comes into sharp relief, actually, in the annual wage review. And I would say that probably in many other countries where the details are different, but the same problem presents itself. Now, so here's the big question. there is, as Pulyar Kurrumbach says and basically proves in his research, if it says that there is a downward pressure on the rate of profit, a critical feature of the society we live in, does that mean we should moderate our wage claims?
Yeah, but ultimately it wouldn't make any difference because the wage claims would just become minuscule and people wouldn't be able to actually live.
Yes, well, the...
That's the obvious logical outcome of that statement.
That's one of the obvious contradictions that then emerges.
Yeah, well, capitalism is a cannibal, basically.
Who's going to buy the product that gets produced? The wages goods that get produced, these are the goods that are paid for out of wages. They're going to be overproduced, aren't they? Until something happens to destroy a lot of the existing capital. And what does that the best? Well, there's two things that do it extra well, and that is global heating-driven disasters that destroys capital and therefore, in the first instance, kicks off a reversal in the decline in the rate of profit. And the second thing, of course, is war.
I was going to say, is this why we're having this war at the moment?
So we go back to a basic, some very basic stuff about the society we live in, and its contradictions are as relevant today as they were when the system first developed in the late 18th century. So what does it mean for the annual wage? How do we jump to that? Well, the first thing is that the particular measure of profitability that we've been talking about, which is obsessed over by every single employer, they obsess over it because if their competitors have got a better rate of profit than they are, they know they're in trouble. So in order to compete, they have to somehow or other get the rate of profit up. And that means an increase in the rate of exploitation of workers. And that takes us to what the employers are saying and what the unions are saying in their submissions to the annual wage review. That provides... Now, none of that particular way of measuring profitability is absolutely silent in the annual wage review discussions and submissions. There are a sort of indirect references to aspects of it, but it is not grappled with by anybody because they all accept that they all want the current society to continue. The unions just want a fairer go within it. Fairer, you can't get a fair go within it, but you might be able to get a fairer go, so to speak, if you've got a good policy, proposal, a good strategy. And the employers, of course, are desperate to increase the rate of exploitation because that means that they'll make more profit out of the physical investment they've made.
So it sounds like a disaster, doesn't it? It sounds like the Titanic.
Well, it's riven with contradictions and it's no good... We've got to be careful sort of putting it like that because this has been trending for a very long time. And generally speaking, particularly in Australia, it has not led to a powerful push against the sinking of the Titanic. Mm. It's been more along the lines of using all the technology available to plug the hole in it.
Yes, yes.
In other words, the system has continued. As destructive as it has been, it continues to be given, to use the current jargon, a social license to continue.
Well, going back to something you said just a bit earlier, It's kind of interesting to reflect that this system that we're living in actually had a beginning, which was the 18th century, as you were saying. So,
well, it matured significantly. There were signs of it before that, of course, but it matured to a very significant level with all the major features established around that time, yes.
Yeah, which of course means that because people have all been living in it for such a long time, there's this idea that it's impossible for the world to be in a different state. And it kind of reminds me of that Ursula Le Guin famous quote about people used to think that God kings couldn't be eliminated, but of course things have changed.
Yes. Well, I think the thing is that the main point is that there is still not, you know, a majority sentiment that's anywhere near strong enough to change the system. But there are tendencies in that direction. And, of course, there have been examples in the past and still being pursued practically in the present, which is one reason why Trump wants to destroy, or Trump and the socio-political religious class, part of the capitalist class around him, want to get destroy Kulba as it currently is and get it back, because they can't tolerate a society that has democratic socialist characteristics on their doorstep. That's another separate discussion. Let's return to the annual wage review. Now, in the annual wage review, the first step is the submissions, as we discussed last week. And there are a lot of economic indicators that are used by both the employers and the unions to justify their claims. And remember, the ACT claim is 5% plus, and I did not really properly address this last week. The second part of the ACTU submission is that the national minimum wage for workers on junior the national minimum wage be set at what is called the C12 level, and its equivalent in all of it. So the C12 level is in the manufacturing award, and then there are equivalents in every one of the other 122 awards. I think it's 120, 123 altogether. There is an equivalent there. And so the new national minimum wage would be at that C12 level. Now, by memory, that's another 5% increase. All right? Now, yeah, they say comfortable with it being phased in. So, in fact, for workers on minimum wage, it's more than a 5% claim. It's a 5% plus claim. And then the third part of it is the support to get rid of junior rates for workers who are 18 years or older. And junior rates, and to raise the regular apprenticeship to the adult rate. So there are those aspects of the claims that are very, if successful, very beneficial for the lowest paid. And I didn't quite cover all of those properly last week.
Yeah, okay.
So the ACT then used the essence of the ACTU economics in its submission is that it tries, if you like, to hoist the commission on its own petard. In other words, it seeks to use all of the economic arguments that the commission made last year, the 2005-26 decision, which brought in a disappointingly low increase, but they say that all of the arguments that the commission used last year justify a 5% increase. So, and at the heart of that is that the claim is affordable. In other words, by meeting the 5% plus the other elements, won't do harm to things like overall profits, business investment, inflation, and so on. And I think this is worth emphasizing. Of the claims that I've read so far, and I've studied more closely obviously the ACT claim and also the Australian Industry Group claim, theirs is usually the most credible of employers.
So what did you find?
And the ACT claim overall is easily the most substantial claim. In terms of within the restrictions that it accepts, and in mounting that case that the Fair Work Commission itself, its economic, are the arguments in favour of a 5% increase.
One of the most interesting things about the thing you just said about the ACTU's claim is that it is couched in the terms of the employer's needs as opposed to the worker's needs, I would have thought.
No, I don't think that's fair. It's couched in what they are willing to accept is the needs of the economy overall, and they say that, therefore, if you look at that in the way they do, the 5% is entirely justifiable. And within the restrictions of that argument, without taking into account the big issue, which we've already discussed about the rate of profit, within the framework of that argument, they produce very substantial material.
It's kind of interesting because at the moment, a whole range of corporations, like, say, for example, Telstra, for example, and this is just a straw poll, like my phone has now been, costs have now been increased again, $5 for no reason at all. Like every year they just increase the amount that you have to pay for their service. Yes. And there's a whole range of services that are exactly the same. So for example, gas, it costs me more to have it connected than it does for the amount of gas I actually use.
Yeah.
There's a whole range of things that have that corporations and capitalism have set in stone that continually keep increasing for people who basically have very limited income.
One of the laws of running businesses is that if you've got the power and the opportunity arises, get ahead with price gouging.
Well, the economy, the government and the economy don't appear to be dealing with those issues when it comes to things like the national wage case. You know, like they've got levers, and the national wage case is one of those levers, but then it's within the framework of a larger economy.
Well, it might be hard to believe, but the ACTU submission actually doesn't deal extensively price gouging yet. I want to come back to that point. But it does deal with the impact of corporate pricing on the standard of living in quite a safe way, like quite a helpful way. Keeping in mind that everything I'm saying now is about what they're saying inside the restrictions, what's required by the annual wage, the statutory requirements.
Yeah, we have to finish, I'm afraid, because it's come to the end of the program. But when do they come? When is it announced? When is the Fair Work Commission going to announce its outcome?
Well, the decision is usually announced in around mid-June,
mm-hmm.
and and that's so that the whatever they award, it can be applied in the first full pay period of
the new year, the new financial year.
In July.
Yeah.
Now, the critical dates, and I don't have them all in front of them, so I'm going by memory. I think the there's about another fortnight before reply submission. And this is where the ACT says what it wants to say about what's wrong and misleading in the employer's submissions, and the same thing with the employers. And then that might see also some new content from the ACTU and the employers about the impact of the war.
Okay.
And then on May the 9th, there are, after the budget, there is a new set of submissions, so that those who are making submissions can. Now, that makes May Day a big deal. Do we make this issue a big deal at the annual one? Past practice says no one really gets it. They don't understand the impact on the standard of living.
Have to wind up, Don.
Yeah, and then there's a final face-to-face one-day meeting in the commission building in Sydney, and that led on to the decision, as I said, in mid-June.
Okay, thank you very much for your time, and we'll catch up with you soon, okay?
Learn the decision. Learn the submissions.
Okay. Bye-bye.
See you later.